someone not showing interest in you should be an automatic flag, automatic disqualifier for you then investing more of your time and energy. If you are continually going after people who are signaling to you that they aren't interested, that is going to crush your self-esteem.
When you're doing dating coaching, for people who have never had a dating coach, can you kind of flesh out or give some examples of types of conversations that you're having?
Is this woman that you're describing actually who is going to make a good long-term partner for you? You want a 25-year-old who's ready to get married and settle down? That's not the case for many 25-year-olds, especially a 25-year-old who's invested in her career. When matchmakers are looking for women, they look on Instagram. When matchmakers are looking for men, they look on LinkedIn. So it kind of highlights what each sex is placing value on in the early or at least initial stages to spark interest. Truly, the way to give yourself the best possible shot of getting out of the friend zone is to actually move on and not treat that person like they aren't a friend. She doesn't get girlfriend privileges. She doesn't get the girlfriend treatment. And in fact, you need to not just act that way. You need to truly feel that way and disqualify her from your potential interest list because she doesn't show interest in you, and move on.
Today on Modern Relationships, we're pulling in Blaine Anderson, an expert matchmaker, for a candid conversation about the dating landscape for men. We explore what makes dating work, what men often get wrong, and the frameworks professional guidance can provide to bridge the gap. Blaine, welcome to Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm excited to have you as a guest interviewer for a number of episodes, and I thought we would do a one-on-one for our audience to be introduced to you and your teachings.
I love it. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So Blaine, first, for those who are unfamiliar with your work, why don't you briefly introduce who you are and what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. My name is Blaine Anderson, also known as Dating by Blaine on social media. I am a dating coach and matchmaker for men. So I teach men how to create chemistry with women they're attracted to, authentically market themselves, and generally attract awesome women that they are excited about.
So it's interesting to be a woman dating coach for men. And it also seems like one of the other big dating coaches, Matthew Hussey, also helps women. And so talk about that phenomenon, because typically when we think about people giving advice to men or women, it's usually people of the same sex.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, because I'm a woman, that's what makes me a good dating coach. And likewise, a man couldn't be a good dating coach for other men. I think it's more about, you know, the content and the principles that you teach and that you are, you know, putting out there. But I will say, as a woman, I have a unique ability to look at things from a woman's lens and how women might be perceiving it when guys do certain things or say certain things, or, you know, even, you know, reviewing their dating app profile. If you want to attract, I'm not saying you want to attract me, but if you want to attract a woman who is, you know, maybe similar, then I can give a unique insight there that a guy dating coach, your guy friends aren't going to be able to give you.
Totally. And the biggest advice I hear you give time and time again is the leg lengthening surgery. Is that right?
Yes, everyone should get it. No, absolutely not. But I do. I did have a client who, which is what you're referring to, I tweeted about it or posted about it on X, who did get a leg lengthening surgery, and he swears by it. He's very happy with his results. So don't knock it till you try it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. The focus on men, where do you think that comes from for you? Do you think they need more help, or you can give them better advice, or just better to focus on that niche?
Yeah, so it's kind of twofold. Before I was doing this full time, when it was just something I did, you know, for fun on the side, I was helping a lot of my guy friends because I knew that they were awesome men and they had a lot going for them. And then they would complain to me like, oh, I don't get any matches online, or my dates aren't going very well. So I would look at their dating app profiles and I'd be like, well, you're giving serial killers, so like, we can change this. And I just realized they had no clue how they were coming across, both online and then sometimes in person too. So that's what initially got me started working with men in particular. And then also just from a business standpoint, ultimately this is a business. And I think having a niche of being able to speak directly to men has been helpful to grow my business and gain notoriety there, as opposed to trying to talk to everybody.
What are men doing when they're giving serial killer?
That's usually a function of having really bad photos, or not even really bad. Maybe that's a stretch of just having bad photos. You're not smiling. You look really stern. They're kind of low quality. You can't really see what you look like. Those are some of the typical problems that can give that serial killer impression.
You mentioned on a post in X that you could boil a lot of your non-matchmaking work with men down to two main pieces of advice. Of course, there's a lot in the weeds, but at the highest level, stop diminishing yourself and wasting time on uninterested women and start participating in activities you love where women spend time and talk to them. Can you flesh these out a bit?
Yeah. So the second one, spending time, you know, where you like spending time already and where women are also spending time, I think is really underrated. We live in a day and age where it's very easy to just go from work to home. Maybe you hit the gym. You can get everything delivered to your door basically at a moment's notice. You can get a lot of your social fulfillment through a screen. And so if you aren't going in person and engaging in these activities and expanding your social and circle and community, you are going to have a lot less shots on goal with like-minded people. So one is just like getting there. And then the second thing, which shouldn't be rocket science, but for some reason I think is also underappreciated, is, okay, what do you like to do? Okay, find women who also like to do that thing, and you automatically are going to have things in common to talk about and probably at least enjoy spending time together initially. So that's very underrated.
Yeah. And the first one, stop diminishing yourself and wasting time on uninterested women.
Yeah, that's a big one as well. And I think, frankly, that applies to like anybody who's dating, especially if you're struggling with dating. It's very easy to get caught up in the idea of someone. Oh, they have all of the qualities I am looking for, or we had this great first date, but now she's not calling me back. Someone not showing interest in you should be an automatic flag, automatic disqualifier for you then investing more of your time and energy. One, your time and energy is very valuable, so you should put that towards people who respect it and are giving you theirs as well. And then two, if you are continually going after people who are signaling to you that they aren't interested, that is going to crush your self-esteem, bring down your confidence, and then make you have worse outcomes with future people or act in a way that is lacking confidence with future interactions. So it's all around just kills the dating game.
When you're doing dating coaching, can you, for people who are kind of unfamiliar, who've never had a dating coach, can you kind of flesh out or give some examples of types of conversations that you're having with people or what it looks like?
Yeah. So there's a few different ways that I personally work with clients. A large part of my business is course-based, which sounds like people are like, oh, I don't want a course. I really want to work with somebody one-on-one. I would say to that, like, take my course and then, you know, like reevaluate, because from working with thousands and thousands of guys, I know, you know, everyone is coming to me from a unique starting point. Like everyone has unique past experiences, brings their own baggage, so to speak, to the table. But most people want to get to the same point B. They want to feel confident with themselves around women. They want to be able to create chemistry and flirt, and they want to have more options with women that they are interested in. And to get from point A to point B, you need a lot of the same fundamentals. And that's like really where my courses help guys and where it's a good starting point. From a coaching perspective, like one-on-one coaching, that can be really different based on the person. A lot of it is just taking those principles from the course and helping the person apply them to their life based on who they are, who they're looking to attract, where they live, for example, what their interests are. So it's just more of like a hand-holding, but it's a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah. And can you say more about the courses that you offer and sort of how you decided what material to put in them?
Yeah. So my first and most popular course is just my dating masterclass. It's based around my 5 E's of dating, which I developed: empathize, embrace, embody, engage, and execute. So it's everything you need to know from the psychology behind why women want what they want, how you're going to show them that you've got it, to the tactical side of interacting with women. So approaching them, what you're going to say, what you're going to text them, how you're going to escalate things physically on dates, everything from who you are to getting in a relationship is covered there. I realized there were some people who needed more or wanted more specific advice, or even maybe just like couldn't afford the full program. So I broke out smaller pieces that were asked about the most frequently. So Approach Academy is all about approaching women in person. So if you're struggling with like, I don't know where to meet women, and like, I would really not know how to approach a woman which I get is very challenging, and a lot of men struggle with that, then Approach Academy is a great place to start. Texting OS is also a very popular course of mine. It was actually featured in the New York Times. It's all about from how you're going to text from an initial match or meeting all the way through to being in a relationship and everything in between. And then Online Dating OS, which is my course that's just about online dating, which obviously most people who are single these days are online dating. But the thing a lot of guys get wrong is they're just wasting their time doing it because they don't have a good profile. So Online Dating OS breaks down what makes a good profile, tons of examples of photos and prompts, how to think about your profile and start getting better matches in less than an hour.
And so when you meet guys, because I understand the guys you work with are in their 30s or even 40s, and they're sort of either chronically single or chronically breaking up, but they're sort of, you know, have done well for themselves. They're, you know, reasonably attractive. Why do you think that is? What are the sort of common patterns, your failure modes you see?
Yeah, well, I would also correct that slightly to say I have clients as young as their early 20s, and I have clients who are well into their 60s. So this isn't just for guys in their 30s or just for guys in their 40s who find themselves chronically single. I would say most of my clients fall into one of two categories. One is maybe more closely related to who you just described. I generally call him the engineer. He may or may not actually be an engineer, but usually has a good job, works in a technical space, oftentimes spends a lot of time behind his computer, his screen, and doesn't have a lot of relationship experience. And that often comes down to the fact that he's been previously investing in his career or just didn't have anyone in his life to teach him about dating, not an older brother, not a dad who was, you know, kind of guiding about like, hey, here's how to think about it. Here's how to ask a woman out. And so his lack of success usually comes down to inexperience compiled with not knowing what action to take. So that's like that the one category of men I see a lot of. And then the second category is the opposite of chronically single, chronically in a relationship, usually coming out of a long-term relationship or a divorce. A lot has changed since this guy was last on the market and last single, and he doesn't even know where to begin in the world of social media, dating apps, and texting, and wants, you know, the cheat sheet to get up to speed to have a thriving dating life.
Yeah, those are helpful. And so when you help in a matchmaking capacity too, what are sort of some mindsets that you have to help correct or you know, from the get-go, or sort of how do common conversations go early on?
Yeah, so with my matchmaking clients, it's a little bit different. If I'm going to take somebody on, or my matchmaking team is going to take something on, the assumption is that they are already really good at dating. So if you need coaching, and this would go for whether you're working with me as a matchmaker or a different matchmaker, I would advise a man, do not pay to go on dates with higher quality women if you aren't confident on the date, because then you're paying to get turned down more. And that's like, no one wants that. That just doubly sucks. You've now paid for it. It was a really high quality woman and you're being rejected. So it's a recipe for disaster. So my matchmaking clients are really guys who are already, they already know what they want, they know how to perform on the date, but they are oftentimes just very busy, spend a lot of time working, and don't have a good top of funnel strategy for meeting the type of women they want to meet. So I help them, or we help them, go on more dates with those type of women. That said, our common conversation I am having with them, especially early on as we're learning about each other and figuring out how to work together, is, okay, is this woman that you're describing actually who is going to make a good long-term partner for you? And that my best clients are really open to my team's feedback on what will make a good date and what will make a good partner for them, and at least open to taking that initial match or meetup, because we've so often have guys say like, oh, I really need a woman who falls within this very narrow criteria. But then if they trust us and go on a date with somebody who maybe doesn't hit all of that criteria, or is maybe outside one of like the ranges that they gave us, they'll end up being very happy.
Let's double click on that. When you say, you know, when you ask someone, hey, are you sure that's the criteria that'll make you happy? What criteria are they giving you that is sort of leading you to maybe question if that's the right criteria?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it all, but some common examples are, you know, even an educational background. Like, I went to an Ivy League school. I really want to make sure that my wife also went to an Ivy League school. When you really dig into that, does that matter for somebody who's going to be a good wife and a good mother to your children? There are I've heard arguments, you know, that you could say, okay, like, I understand why that's important to you. But for the most part, that is not going to be indicative of whether or not somebody is going to be a good long-term fit for you. There are things within going to an Ivy League school that could signal things you're looking for, like ability to commit and work hard and, you know, be intellectual, but that's not the only way to assess if somebody has those qualities. So that's one. I think age is another one I butt up against a lot. Men have, I mean, there's something to be said for it. Women have biological clocks that are different than men. So I get it. If you want to have 3 or 4 kids, you're not going to be marrying somebody who is 40 years old. You need to marry somebody who is younger. But in my experience talking to men and doing matchmaking, they have a much narrower range or window that they think women are like fertile in or will be able to provide that for them. So oftentimes I'm coaxing them to just be a little more open-minded about age. I literally just got off the phone with a matchmaking client who's 39, and he was like, I only want to date women who are in their mid-20s. But he said he's looking for his wife. And I'm like, okay, well, we have some things at tension here. You want a 25-year-old who's ready to get married and settle down? That's not the case for many 25-year-olds, especially a 25-year-old who's invested in her career and has, you know, spent time in her education. She's probably still figuring out who she is and what she wants. That's not a blanket rule. There are plenty of 25-year-olds out there who are married or who are going to get married. But based on some of his other criteria, I told him, you are significantly narrowing your pool of women who hit your other criteria and who are going to be interested in you. 25-year-old thinks a 40-year-old is old, frankly, you know?
We'll get right back to the conversation after a word from our sponsors. Modern Relationships is sponsored by Relationship Hero, your personal relationship coach. It's an open secret in Silicon Valley that people are using these relationship coaches. Over 100,000 users are happy they tried Relationship Hero. You might be wondering, what is it like to talk to a relationship coach? Well, here's Jackie Pugh, a senior coach at Relationship Hero.
That's a really good question. Okay, I actually just got off a call with a client who was getting mixed signals from his ex. So she's the one that broke up with him, but then she kept sending him these really heartfelt, long, emotional messages at midnight, and then in the morning would act like nothing ever happened.
We've all been there. How do you recommend handling something like that?
So what we would do is we would want to hear exactly what's going on so we can help discern, is my client's ex, is she just trying to process her emotions and she's doing it via text message? Is she potentially trying to keep my client on the back burner? Or is she actually trying to reconnect? And if she is, then I help my client decide, you know, is this something that he actually wants to do, reconnect? And if so, why?
Thanks, Jackie. If you want to try your first one-on-one or couples coaching session, go to relationshiphero.com/modern. You'll get $50 off your first session if you use our link. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/modern.
Is it fair to compare sort of what age is for men is what height is for women, i.e. something that they, you know, they stigmatize on dating apps, but should actually be more open-minded about?
I feel like women are typically more, from what I've seen and like from doing matchmaking and talking to women, they're typically more flexible on age than men are. And if any, and I think women are almost like, men almost exclusively want younger, you know, I haven't had any clients who are like, you know, I just really want to date someone older as a man. But I do talk to women as we're sourcing women for our clients. Some women have preferences of guys who are their age and younger, and some women have preferences of guys who are much older than them. And that feels more like a personal preference as opposed to a blanket rule of like guys always wanting younger girls.
Yeah. It is interesting. So just while we're on the topic of what guys want, I'm curious your perspective on career. I have a female friend who's done very well in her career, and she worries that if she sort of leaves her career, that her husband will lose interest in her because she'll be less interesting, less relevant. Obviously, it's so case specific, but what do you see generalized among sort of older men in terms of what they want in a woman?
Yeah. So obviously recognizing that there is a sample bias here, and I'm totally generalizing. My matchmaking clients are definitely looking for women who are going to take on a more traditional role and be able to spend time with the family. And that doesn't mean they can't have a career. And there's obviously different extremes. Some are like, hey, I really want a very traditional wife. I want traditional roles. And then some are like, yeah, it's great if she has a career, but I definitely want to have kids and that's important to me. And I can afford, you know, childcare. So I want somebody who can at least help me us find the right balance. I have never had a client. I'm trying to think now before I make that blanket statement. At least it is very rare. No one immediately comes to mind who is like, who has told me, hey, I really want a woman who is very career driven. And that's the most important thing to me.
Right. And maybe that was also a sample size of sort of as men get older or something, maybe when men are, you know, I don't know, a bit younger, they want that in a peer as well.
Yeah. And I think also the men who I'm working with, I mean, I'd say for matchmaking, the age range is a little bit different. It's more like mid-30s and up, mid-30s to, you know, mid-50s or 60s, but it's a higher priced product. And so also these are men who can afford a matchmaker. They don't need a woman who can, you know, they don't care about a woman contributing financially. So self-selecting in that sense.
And it's interesting because they're also trying to thread the needle, you know, because you mentioned the higher education thing. They're trying to find someone very smart and, you know, very impressive who also wants to sacrifice, you know, sort of.
And I would say the education thing is more specific to some people. I wouldn't say that that's a generalized thing I see. But with those clients, yeah, I'm definitely I can think of one in particular where it's like, do you not hear like that these things are attention? You want a woman who went to an Ivy League school, who has a career she's passionate about, but you also want to have four kids and a woman who's going to be stay at home. Like why? That's that Venn diagram is narrow. Like there's a lot of women who fall into either one of those categories, but who fall into both those categories, we've shrunk the size down quite a bit. And the other thing that these men are wanting is that kind of goes into the flexibility pieces. And that I think is a sample selection part of it is that they have very full lives. Oftentimes they're very busy with their career and work. So they want somebody who can get on their schedule. They don't want to have to be compromising about when they can travel or whether she can take time off of work. They would rather be able to kind of write the script there.
Yeah. And say more about how matchmaking works in the sense of, you know, some people might be scared that, oh, is it like a negative signal that I couldn't do it on my own? Or if a woman is reached out to by a matchmaker, is that kind of like a buzzkill or something? Is she less excited? Or say more about these, you know, these reservations.
Yeah, I would say it's actually the opposite. Although I'm sure it could be seen as a negative. It's all about how you frame it, right? Dating is marketing. So how we market these guys as matchmakers plays into it. If you're like, yeah, I got this guy. He's been single forever. But like, I really think you guys might hit it off. Like, she's probably like, no, that's weird. But if you're like, I have this amazing guy. He's 40. He's been fully invested in his career for the last 10 years. It's paid off. And now he's at a point where he's ready to find the one and settle down. I think you're going to be compatible for XYZ reasons. She's pumped. She's so excited. And if anything, working with a matchmaker signals he's serious. It signals he knows what he wants. It signals he is a provider. He has the financial means to pay for something like that. So I think when positioned the right way, the women are actually quite excited about it.
Yeah. And in terms of how matchmakers get the women, you sort of in the first place, or that's part of the sort of, it's basically some combination of personal networks, events, sort of, you know, altering the way a recruiter might, you know, outbound the way a recruiter might.
So I think many matchmakers work differently. A unique ability my team has is we actually have access to these like 1% women, these women who are really desirable and attractive and mature and intelligent. And we find them through our personal networks because that's like the type of women we're friends with, frankly. We find them through professional networks. We find them through friends of friends, you know, it's networks as well. And then also online. So yeah, like how a headhunter might find somebody. I was toying with the idea for a post the other day about how when matchmakers are looking for women, they look on Instagram. When matchmakers are looking for men, they look on LinkedIn. So it kind of like highlights what each sex is placing value on in the early or at least initial stages to spark interest.
And by LinkedIn, do you mean like seeing a person and then seeing their LinkedIn? Or do you mean actually like using the LinkedIn sort of functionality and like typing in search words if we're in LinkedIn?
So I don't take on female clients. So this isn't something I do, but I'm definitely familiar with matchmakers who source the men for their female clients on LinkedIn. And I think that often does look like searching by career, searching by even like within specific companies, within cities that, you know, signal a certain amount of status.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it is in terms of the sort of what, you know, there's the marketing and then there's the product. How much of your work, whether when you're also doing coaching, is on the marketing versus the product, or what can you say about the product side of the thing?
Yeah. I often say, you know, if you look at my website, like dating is a marketing problem, because that is 100% true. A lot of the guys who are signing up for my courses or who are doing one-on-one coaching with myself or somebody on my team, they've already got a pretty good product, meaning you know, they're not like sleeping on their buddy's floor or like in their mom's basement. Not that there's anything wrong. It's like you might have a reason for living with your mom, but, you know, they have a solid career. They have a community and friends. They have hobbies that they are interested in. So it's just taking those things and who they already are and teaching them how to authentically market it to women. That being said, a lot of those guys do have room for improvement. The product can be spiffed up a little bit, you know, like maybe it's like some new clothes that just fit you better and elevate your status a bit. Maybe it is getting hobbies that are things that you can talk about on dates. So you have interest outside of work. The product part of it is very important. And so where people fall on like how great their product is obviously a sliding scale. But if you're so far from having a product, and so like basically saying, if you're so far from being somebody that a woman is going to want to date, like, can you answer the why you question? Then the marketing is kind of a mute point at that point. You need to focus on the product. You need to get some hobbies. You need to get in shape. You need to dress a little bit better, depending on where your struggles are. So both really play into dating. And I do touch on both of them. But the assumption is really that like there's something going for the product if you're coming to me and ready to start fine tuning the marketing.
Yeah, that makes sense. What is your best advice on breaking up, or when you work with clients who are just bouncing back? What is your philosophy there?
Yeah, so I hear the question a lot, when is the right time to get back out there? And that rather than having a prescriptive amount of time, usually my answer is something along the lines of when the idea of dating sounds exciting to you again. If you're like, oh, this is miserable, I can't stop thinking about my ex, I don't want to be here, it's like, don't go on a date, that sounds awful. Instead, invest that time in yourself. That's always going to be the best starting point after a breakup, is take the time that was spent in the relationship and reinvest it back into yourself. Pick up a new hobby you haven't tried before. Double down on a hobby you have been interested in or dabbling with. There are so, like, spend more time with your friends and family. Don't put that extra time into something that like isn't going to serve you and better you as a person, because with putting dating aside, you're always going to be happier and more confident when you've invested in yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about when you are working with clients who are starting, you know, they're, you know, several dates in, or they're, you know, a couple months in, and they're sort of saying, hey, I'm sort of questioning whether I should elevate this to something serious. There are some things I'm excited about, some things I'm not excited about, or concerns I have. What are the types of conversations that you have with those clients that lead you to say, I don't know if this is the right thing for you, versus, yeah, just go for it and find out?
Yeah. So no relationship is going to be perfect. In fact, I have clients say more like, I don't know, you know, is it too soon to be exclusive? And the answer there is, if you think she's perfect, it's too soon. You need to have recognized that this person is going to have flaws or things that you're maybe not perfectly aligned on, but you still want to be with them anyway. And so where someone falls on that scale is obviously going to be very specific to them and their relationship. I always love a good pro and con list, because it can help you sort of visualize where you stand with somebody. And are these cons, so to say, or things that you aren't aligned on, things that would be nice to have, or are they deal breakers? Is it, I get along so well with this person, but I really want to have kids and she says she hasn't, but everything else is perfect. Okay, that's only one con, but that's a big one. And that would be a reason to, okay, this isn't, like, you probably shouldn't invest more time here unless you can agree that you don't want to have kids. Whereas some things like, you know, she chews with her mouth open, or like doesn't have a car and that's annoying because I always have to pick her up, are things that you can probably get over if the pro list is long.
Yeah. What do you think to that end are things that people sort of overrate from early dates that aren't as important? You know, sort of, you know, some people will say, hey, there wasn't a spark right away or something, or what are other things that you think?
Yeah, I think that's a big one that people get wrong, is assuming that there should be fireworks and chemistry right off the bat, when that often isn't indicative of something that's going to be a healthy long-term relationship. So I feel like women tend to do that even more than men, at least within my clients. These guys will often hear like, hey, you're really nice, but I just didn't feel the chemistry right. I just don't think this is the romantic relationship I'm looking for. And so that's one of the things I do with men, is I help them learn how to create more chemistry and stand out as a suitor or romantic interest. But I really encourage women, like, give the nice guy a chance. Give the guy who you're like, oh yeah, he was great, but I don't know, I just didn't feel it. It's like, take the second date, take the third date, because chemistry and attraction can build.
Say more about this. Let's talk about this concept of the friend zone. When someone is stuck in the friend zone, what is actually happening there? And if someone, you know, likes someone who just considers them a friend, should they just move on and find someone else? Or yeah, how do you think about that?
So obviously there have been plenty of fairy tales about men who have been in the friend zone and then they find themselves with the woman of their dreams or vice versa. What I would say is truly the way to give yourself the best possible shot of getting out of the friend zone is to actually move on and not treat that person like they aren't a friend. So I just kind of spelling that out. If there's a guy and he comes to me and he's like, yeah, I'm like friends with this girl. I've expressed my interest to her. I've asked her out. She says she doesn't see me that way. Should I keep, you know, trying? Should I keep pursuing her? Like, we are very good friends. My answer is you can remain friends with her, but I recommend putting up very strong boundaries and getting very clear and treating her in a way that she is just your friend. She doesn't get girlfriend privileges. She doesn't get the girlfriend treatment. And in fact, you need to not just act that way. You need to truly feel that way and disqualify her from your potential interest list because she doesn't show interest in you, and move on. Truly move on. Date other people. Because if she sees that you are willing to bend over backwards for her and wait around for her after she has told you she's not interested, that indicates that you don't think you have other options, that you are willing to settle for somebody who doesn't like you back because you don't respect yourself. And that's unattractive. But if you can truly move on and she sees like, wow, you know, he's not waiting around for me and he is out there living his life, I'm not saying that, oh, then she's going to magically be interested in you. I have no idea. There's so much more that goes into that. But that is going to give you the best possible shot of something potentially working out in the future.
Yeah. And a related topic to that is, what do you say to men who simp too hard, or kind of too sort of fawning, or sort of have this, you know, overly romantic approach?
So that's often an example of a guy who is not necessarily marketing that's his problem. It's that he needs to get more on board with his own product that he offers. He needs to spend more time investing in himself to a point where he believes he's awesome and he deserves really high quality women. Because everybody wants to date up. Everyone wants to date someone who they perceive to have high status and to be intelligent and interesting, that they're going to be excited to introduce to their friends and family. And if you're treating her like she's on a pedestal, she has no place to look but down at you. And that's not dating up. She's not going to be pumped and excited to date you and to introduce you to her friends. So my message to them is, level up, get confident in who you are, and then go attract women who you deserve.
Yeah. And to that end, when you're working with clients, how do you think about sort of the barrier between sort of, you know, coaching and therapy, or, you know, where your work ends, therapy begins?
So I'm very clear about what I am and what I am not. I'm a dating coach. I'm going to help you authentically market yourself. I can teach you how to create chemistry with women and flirt. And I'm going to give you all of the tactical advice you need to meet and date more women you're excited about. But if you have deep-seated issues, And we will work on your confidence and building you up and getting you excited about who you are and improving the product side of things, like I've touched on. But if you have deep-seated issues with neediness or attachment style or confidence that you just can't get over, or anxiety, you know, it's normal to feel anxious approaching a woman. That is a normal feeling. But if you can't sort of rip off the Band-Aid and do it, and your anxiety is paralyzing you from taking action, that is one step deeper than I can, you know, really credibly say I can help with or fix as a dating coach, in which case I absolutely recommend therapy, working with a psychologist or a therapist. Some of my best and most successful clients work with me and a therapist. So I think it's a really good 1-2 combo. A therapist's job is not to review your dating app and tactically tell you how to plan romantic dates and escalate things physically with a woman. That's a dating coach's job. That's where I'm going to be helpful. But a therapist can really help in some of those other areas.
You wrote on X this idea that, you know, men are surprised to learn that coaching for women is also a thing too, and also maybe a huge thing. And maybe they're surprised because they think women have it too, you know, easily. They get to pick from all these options. But you, and then you summarize sort of the main messages women hear in this coaching is, you know, stop responding to the charismatic guy who only texts you at 10 p.m. for sex, and start taking first and second dates with the frumpy guy who appreciates you.
Yeah, so it's obviously simplified quite a bit to fit into an X post that's digestible. But I think that, well, first of all, it's absolutely true. The coaching industry for women is significantly bigger than the coaching industry for men. And that's for a variety of reasons. Some that matter, some that don't. But I think the big takeaway is that women don't necessarily have it easier. They just have different challenges dating. And yeah, to the point that, you know, I made and that you just reviewed, it's that they're picking the wrong men often.
And humor me, why do women spend more on coaching than men? Is it that they have bigger challenges? Is that they just care more? Is it that?
Yeah, I think women are more likely in general to invest in themselves and to spend money and time on self-improvement. And frankly, there's nobody cheaper than a single man in my experience. You know, women are, they love to spend money as a extreme generalization. They shop. They're like 70% of e-commerce is women. And men tend to be more focused on not spending money on savings, not talking about their feelings, which is part of this, not necessarily admitting when they have a problem, where women are more likely to raise their hand and be like, hey, I need help with this thing.
Yeah. And maybe zooming out a little bit, can you share more about where you think dating is going? Like, do you think coaching and matchmaking is going to be, you know, significantly bigger in years to come? Do you think app fatigue is real and thus, you know, less people or fewer people are going to meet on apps? Or how do you think dating is going to be changing?
Yeah, for better or worse, I don't think meeting online is going anywhere. And whether that's via apps or matchmaking or some platform that's yet to exist, I think that that is the way of the future, just because it's where people are spending time. They spend time on computers. And that is not an endorsement for give up on approaching women in person. In fact, it's the opposite. You're going to be a lot more, you can stand out actually a lot easier being a guy who is confident enough to approach, who does talk to women in person, because so many people aren't doing that today. And I don't think that's going to change because we're so used to just spending time and having things delivered to our doorstep via our phone or computer. And I definitely don't think matchmaking and coaching are going anywhere, because we're living in an increasingly complex and technology forward world. I think part of the reason my coaching exists today is because it is crazy to expect that people would know how to communicate in 150 characters about themselves and be able to attract somebody or see if they're attracted to somebody in that sort of situation, when for the past millennia, we've been, you know, meeting people in caves and on streets. So much has changed so quickly in how we communicate and how we think about attraction and who we're going to be with, that people need help and people need guidance with it. And that's not because you need help doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. In fact, it just means you're normal, because this is really hard.
Yeah, it is. And to that point about the stigma, it's interesting. You know, people, you know, if they were to think about, you know, to what degree or how important are sort of relationships to their life, they'd say, hey, this is the most important thing in my life, or one of the most important things in my life. And yet if they were to allocate sort of or think about how much time or money they spend on it, you know, sort of with that being true, there would be a big divergence. And so in the same way that online dating, the stigma sort of went away after a while, and then sort of everyone started doing, or a lot of people started doing it. Similarly, I wonder if coaching and matchmaking might have a similar trajectory, that once sort of it becomes more accessible, better products, services, and the stigma will be removed because it just makes sense, in the same way that people pay to become more fit or become more healthy or become, you know, or any other thing that's really important, that this would make sense as well.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. Is just as it becomes more mainstream and commonly accepted, there will always be people who don't need help, you know, and don't need a matchmaker, don't need dating coaching. And that's cool too. But I think increasingly there are more people who are struggling. And then as people become more open to it, it will become a product. I've even in the 4 or 5 years that I've been doing this full time, I've seen that. And I get, you know, engagement announcements all the time of like, hey, I took your class 2 years ago, or I took your class a year ago. And, you know, I met my wife, or I met my girlfriend, I met my fiance, and I told her I hired a dating coach. No one has ever followed that up with. And she thinks it's really freaking weird. No, never. It's always. And she was so impressed. I took the initiative, and so, you know, blown away that I was that dedicated to self-improvement that she found it really attractive. And I'm not saying if you have a dating coach, go out on your every first date and like, by the way, I hired a dating coach. Can you tell? Like, no, obviously, you know, it comes up at an appropriate time, but taking action and making a change to better yourself and saying, you know, something along the lines of like, yeah, I hired a dating coach. Clearly it worked because I'm here with you now, is actually a really attractive thing to do and to be able to talk about confidently.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, sometimes people say the best dating apps are kind of, you know, Instagram or LinkedIn in some ways, in the sense of like things that are not like explicitly about dating, which is why I'm excited about what you're doing, in the sense that it's more content focused, and it's about dating, but it's also about sort of, you know, there's some parts around sort of general, you know, self-development, and, you know, people who, like, women would be interested in people who listen to that, who are trying to better themselves.
So. Totally, totally. And I think that's some piece of feedback I get, and I love to get in my testimonials, is like, this is really a course about self-improvement that happens to help your dating life. Because a lot of the things, you know, that I touched on before, expanding your social circle, investing in yourself, having interesting hobbies, like, those aren't directly related to your dating life. You're going to be happier, you're going to be more confident because of them. But those things are then going to make your dating life improve. So,
yeah. And that's in contrast to what this book, The Game, taught sort of 15 years ago, or in contrast to the extent that was more focused on sort of tricks or sort of, you know, more short term stuff, as opposed to sort of the.
Yeah. How can you make a woman think that you're attractive, rather than how can you be attractive to a woman?
Yeah. One more dating advice post you wrote, you said, not PC dating advice. Men always pay on the first date. Women never have sex before the fourth date. Seems straightforward why men should pay on the first date. Women like men who can pay. Why is it obvious that women should never have sex before the fourth date? And of course, you acknowledge in the follow-up there are exceptions, but why generally?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily obvious. From my perspective, both of those statements are what is going to give you the best shot at the outcome you're looking for, assuming the outcome you're looking for is a relationship. I'm not saying what's fair, what's right, or anything else, but from what I have witnessed from working with thousands of clients, what I've witnessed with friends and in, you know, my own life, is that oftentimes if you sleep with a man too soon, he's less likely to remain interested and, you know, kind of continue to pursue and get to know you on a deeper, more emotional level. And I actually think this goes both ways. I say this to my male clients too. Just because you can have sex with her doesn't mean you should. If you are interested in a long-term relationship, not only from your own, like, you may benefit mentally from waiting and getting to know her more, but she will also be more interested in you if you're not the one rushing it. And I think a few key reasons for that are, when if you're the physical connection, you know, moves at a much faster pace than the emotional connection, things are more likely to feel out of sync and maybe like that this isn't a good fit, you know, and sex can be awkward. Sex can be weird. There can be like things that happen that might not be like, that aren't like the movies. It very rarely looks like the movies. But if you already have an emotional connection with this person, either direction, and you like this person, you're much more likely to be able to laugh it off and feel like, okay, like, you know, let's try again. Whereas if you don't really know this person that well, it's much more likely to feel awkward and not be as good. And then you're more likely either party to write it off and be like, eh, on to the next one. Like, he's not it or she's not it.
Yeah. No, that's people like things that they've worked for.
Yeah. I think that even like, yeah, you can apply that concept to, you know, buying things. You're a lot more excited if you just have always been given everything and someone gives you your car, like you generally take less care of it. You're less excited about it than if you busted your ass, you worked for it, you got it, you picked it out, and you're like proud of it.
Yeah, totally. I want to, I know, you know, your focus is mostly on dating, but I also want to transition to when you're in the relationship and long-term relationship, and maybe one segue to do that is this podcast that we're going to co-host a number of episodes on. I'm curious what you're excited to ask couples about, or what you're excited to learn about. You know, one thing I'll just say that I've been intrigued by is of the first two guests, you know, there's been, you know, Delian and Nadia and then Kristen and Phil, there's been a big divergence where for Nadia and Delian, it wasn't obvious that they should be together. And in the beginning, in Nadia's friends, some of them thought that Delian actually wouldn't be a good match. And of course, they're an amazing match. And so it's not obvious what kinds of people. It wasn't obvious to Nadia that this is the type of person that she'd be interested in. It wasn't not obvious to her friends that they were a good fit once they started. But then also Kristen and Phil were friends for a few years before they started dating. And it was obvious to other people that they should be dating, but not to them. And so that there are many different ways to be successful, of course. I'm curious, what are some of the things that you're intrigued by or interested to talk to couples about?
Yeah. So you kind of danced around this with Nadia and Delian, and as a dating coach and matchmaker, one of my key interests that we've touched on is what did you previously think you wanted in a relationship and that you thought you had to have? And then what does your relationship look like now? Like where are those things? Did those things end up lining up, and where are they perhaps different? I think that's always very illuminating and interesting. And then I always like to hear about like what makes a relationship work. Cause I think it's very, people phrase things in different ways, but you oftentimes do hear some of the same commonalities amongst successful relationships, but oftentimes just hearing it said a different way can help people have that aha moment of like, I have that in this relationship, or maybe I don't have that in this current relationship. And I see why that's something that's important. So those are some two that stand out to me as immediate interests based on, you know, the couples I've met and talked to.
How did your ideas of what you thought you wanted a partner change over time? And did the types of people that you dated over time, were they very different from?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. So for those who don't know, I'm married. I've been married for a couple of years now and been with my partner, you know, a few years past that. But when I look back at my 20s and who I prioritized in my 20s and who I went after in my 20s, it was a very different person than who I ultimately married and am now very happy with. And so to name it, I would say in my 20s, I was focused on much more superficial things. So I definitely did care more. I'm tall. I'm like 5'10". And so my husband's taller than me, you know, he's, I think like 6'1 or 6'2, but like, no, I wanted to date.
He got the surgery, of course.
Yeah, but he had the leg lengthening surgery. Just kidding. He didn't. He's going to be like, what the hell? I wanted to date guys who are like 6'4". Like that was like a priority to me. And it's like, that's the stupidest priority. That tells you nothing about like what it would be like to spend time with this person. So I definitely just cared more about physical things like that. And then also I prioritized having fun. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that in your 20s. I was living in New York City. I wanted someone who I could go out with, who had like, you know, fun connections, fun things to do. And now I could give a crap about that. I don't want to go out. I want to stay home, and I want someone who I can sit in silence with or have fun watching a movie or cooking dinner, who I can, you know, talk to endlessly. That's a different person than the person who's going to be like suggesting that we go to a club on a Friday night, you know? So that definitely stands out as things that drastically changed. I also think I put more emphasis later on, okay, does this person see me as like the best version of myself? Whereas in my 20s, like I wasn't really thinking about how, like, of course I wanted to be with people who liked me too. And we had like the fun together. And it's not that I wasn't aware of that, but I think my husband now, like, he sees the best possible version of me, even on days that I don't see that in myself. And that really brings it out in me. Like, he believes I can do, you know, anything. He believes in me. And so having someone who's going to fill you up, even on days where you don't feel that great about yourself, I think is something that can be underrated, and it was for me when I was younger.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So my friend Devin and I created this sort of mini Hinge for our friends and friends of friends and maybe 200 people on it. And I'm sort of very humble about my ability to assess, you know, who would be a good fit. Sometimes I make recommendations and Nadia's like, no, they would never be a good fit. And so I let people self-select of who they would be a good fit, and don't sort of pretend or don't think that I have any real indication. So much of it is luck, but you know, other matchmakers may just be better and certainly have more confidence. I'm curious in your work, how much confidence do you have when you're making matches, or is it just kind of like, hey, is there, you know, more, do you have more humility around it in terms of like, there's a lot of luck involved. You seem to have potential criteria that might be aligned. Why don't you just go see if there's a fit, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think it's someplace in between. I'm very upfront when I'm talking about taking on a potential client. I'm like, if you want the first match to be your wife, like, I don't sign up. Like, I can't guarantee that. It's the time saver, and I can qualify for the things that you have identified and we've mutually agreed upon are must-haves and are things that you absolutely like want in a partner. And then because I've done it a lot, I can see around some corners of like, hey, I think this, you know, just based on knowing you, getting to know you and like knowing her, I think this is like going to be a good match or a good, at least initial fit. What I take a lot of pride in is the quality of the people we work with and the quality of the women we have access to and source are both really high. So I can't guarantee you this is going to be your wife or that there's going to be chemistry, but I can guarantee you, you're not going to feel like you just wasted an hour or a dinner of your life. And that's like really how I define success is my male clients come back from dates. Obviously they go on plenty of dates that like don't go on to a second date, but they say, for whatever reason, you know, we weren't a fit. She's amazing. You should definitely set her up with someone else. You should definitely keep her in your pool. And I count that as a successful date because so much goes in. There's so much that goes into chemistry. And if somebody is going to, you know, move past the first few dates, that is out of everybody's control, including the people involved, you know, but just having the really high quality people and spending time together, then you haven't wasted any time. And I think if you approach dating in general like that, it becomes more fun. If you go on every date being like, if this isn't my wife, it's a waste of time, then you're going to waste a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. And some people have the approach of like, I can't tell you anything about the date. You just have to go there and you'll meet the person. Other people are like, no, let me like pre-qualify it with you. Where do you stand?
We pre-qualify. We don't do any blind dates. So we share photos. We share initial bios, age, the reasons we think it's going to be a match. I sort of like touched on this, but the type of people we're matching and the type of people who are going on our dates, these are busy professionals. They're not just, including the women, they're not just going out with anybody because they have a lot of options. So like, why do you think I'm going to be a match with this guy? Like, is there some initial attraction? I've touched on like attraction can grow, chemistry can grow. I absolutely believe that. But there has to be some initial interest, you know? So we know what our clients are looking for. They've sent us their celebrity crushes, like women they've dated in the past. But both ways, you still want to see a photo and be like, yeah, like I'm excited. I'm looking forward to meeting this person.
Yeah. And for men listening, when a man works with you, or when a client works with you, is it sort of like, how do you package it? Is it sort of like a number of dates? Is it sort of like a period of time? Like, how does it usually work?
Yeah, we do a number of dates. So, you know, you have an initial package. It includes your onboarding and X number of dates for X price, which is the price fluctuates depending on how specific your criteria is and who you're seeking. If we feel like, you know, we have access to a ton of women with this criteria, then it's going to be a lower price point than if you're looking for somebody really, really narrow, who it's going to take us talking to hundreds of women before we even find one woman to set you up with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Great. Well, this is a great overview of how you think about your practice and sort of advice for men and also women looking to get into relationships. Blaine, thank you for coming on, and excited to record a number of episodes with you.
I'm excited too, Eric. This was fun. Talk soon.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.